Hey, this is Tatiana Swedek, and I am very excited to be back from a hiatus with Ahead of the Curve. Ahead of the Curve shares conversations that I have with good people in various industries who share their stories of reflection, business, and personal growth. There is realness, some controversy, but there's also humility, new ideas, and encouragement. Before we get started, I want to say thank you to Anchor, which is the easiest way to make a podcast. It is free. The creation tools allow you to record and edit your podcast from your phone or your computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast on all the various platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And it's really everything you need to make a podcast. So head over to anchor.fm or download the free Anchor app to get started. Hey, this is Tatiana Swedek, and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. On this episode, I speak with Marquis Stillwell. He is an entrepreneur focused on culture and design and is the founder of the urban design firm Open Box. I've known Marquis for a few years and we've always had truly thought-provoking and honest conversations. He's a very genuine soul and brings unique methods of problem-solving to the table when it comes to design. On this episode, we dig in and we talk about people-centered design, his magazine Dean Journal, viewing empathy as a muscle, amplifying the stories of individuals and given communities, the importance of always being yourself and comfortable with yourself, and putting purpose to your privilege. Thanks for listening. Welcome to Ahead of the Curve. I am joined by my friend Marquis Stillwell, who is a designer and a thoughtfully creative entrepreneur. Marquis, I think we met maybe 2.5, 3 years ago at this point,
Definitely.
in DC. Good times. I've had the pleasure to get to know you over the years and have some truly open and honest conversations. So I really, really want to thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. I think that it's so important that we do slow down and have these conversations. And I really appreciate your platform and giving me an opportunity to also just come in and express our thinking and share it. It's always been a pleasure talking with you, and I've always enjoyed watching you and being a part of the work that you've been creating over the years that I've known you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So I guess for listeners who may not know you, what should people know about Marquis Stillwell?
Well, I am passionate about so many different things. Just from a baseline, I have a design and innovation firm called Open Box. We focus on designing for better urban living and thinking about cities and putting people at the center of cities and thinking about how cities are changing rapidly and how might we design systems and platforms and structures to better facilitate our relationship with cities and with each other. And then I also have a film company where we do documentary films exploring similar topics, but delving deeper into at the individual level of people who are making change in the world. And then I also touch on the venture side by making investments into people and projects and opportunities that I feel align with the type of work that we want to do. And so everything from robotics to education to Dean Journal. Team Journal is an amazing magazine focused on design as a social practice.
Cool. And, you know, I wanted to talk about that a little bit later, but since you bring it up, I am a magazine junkie. I love magazines. Nice. Like, that's one of my guilty pleasures, that I'll spend like $45 on a magazine.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I have too many of them.
I know. And I'm like, this is a special treat. And then it's like a month later, I do the same thing.
I know.
But I'm excited to see, you know, when did Deem Journal launch? Because it seemed like not that long ago.
Yeah, well, it officially launched, like coming out on a hard copy this year, but we launched the digital platform on last year. And so we celebrated our 1 year in June. And so it is a magazine that I'm really passionate about. Magazine. I was involved with another magazine called Makeshift years ago and fell in love with the process of telling stories through this archival like thing that you could touch. And so for me, I always wanted to do that again and reached out to a collaborator. And then he reached out to another person. And so the three of us, Alice, New, myself, we started Deem Journal. And so I'm really, really excited about it.
And where did the inspiration come from for Deem?
I think that for me, inspiration is all about doing. I rarely do something based on, say, the past of, you know, just, I mean, of course I was inspired by something I had done before, but I'm always looking to do something more and do something better. And so I was inspired to stretch and really see what could this look like in the digital age where there's not a lot of magazines that come out anymore and it's a really difficult market. But I also knew that if you do something that's beautiful, meaningful, with really good content, that people will pick it up and buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've actually been following Deem's Instagram for a while. And, you know, I like how it's a representation of design in more of a holistic sense. And you've always kind of made it a point to approach design in that way, because I think a lot of the design world could be very, or at least what I've been exposed to, very homogenous and kind of put into a box. But, you know, through all of your different practices, through Deem Journal, through film, experiential design, you kind of expanded the boundaries of how design can be defined, which I really appreciate. So in terms of your other practices, how do you integrate or utilize those to address human-centered design, and how do you define human-centered design?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. You know, I would say for us, whether it's human-centered design or people-centered design, for us, it's really important that we think about not just people as users, but think about people through this idea of experience. And what experience does is help to bring in all the different cultural relevance of who we are as individuals. What I believe has been missing in design, not only from a practice standpoint, there aren't a lot of people with different backgrounds. It is very homogenous. There's not a lot of people of color. There always hasn't been, you know, women involved. And so bringing in an understanding that we all have unique skills and stories to tell and pulling that together and thinking about the people and who they are and making sure that it's people-centered design. And you know, these are small nuances of words, and I'm not trying to split hair on words, but for us, the aspect of culture is very much missing in this idea of human-centered, because a lot of times we believe that you can just do the same process over and over again. A lot of business schools have been trying to teach design thinking, human-centered design, as if it can just be, you know, taken as a model that can be applied by anyone doing anything. What's important is that if you don't have empathetic muscles, it's very difficult to do this work right. And I do believe that empathy is a muscle, not just a thing that you think about. And that's really important, which means that you have to build those muscles. And right now, this country is empathetically out of shape. And we're not willing to run the marathon. We just want rapid response, short sprints. And that's what design ends up being, where they feel like they can just throw a bunch of sticky notes up on the board and rapidly respond to a crisis and synthesize, you know, small sets of insights to turn them into something that ends up just becoming a bigger problem. And that's not what we do. I really believe that you have to respect people and time, and you need to be willing to embed yourself into relationships and feel vulnerable. And that vulnerability builds your muscles of empathy, and that empathy drives towards insights that I believe can last a lifetime.
Yeah, it really, I like how you say empathy is a muscle, because you do have to build it up. And it almost takes practice. Even if you think of yourself as an empathetic person, you sometimes are blinded by your own thoughts or your progress, which you and I have talked about before. You know, someone's, even if they think of themselves as a very progressful person, that doesn't necessarily mean that they approach things in the same way that others do. I don't want to say in the correct way, because I don't know if there necessarily is a correct way to approach things. But really just in an empathetic and understanding way, and almost not speak for those who you didn't get permission to speak for, I guess.
That's right. That's right. And when those individuals aren't represented in the design research process, they're not represented in how we communicate back and forth, and we negotiate on language and culture and how we go back and forth. And that's the challenge. You think that you can just check a box without actually negotiating who that person is. And when I say negotiated, it's not about one person wins over another. It's about a willingness to be vulnerable and open and allow for space.
Right.
And that's really important.
That wiggle room.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Another thing that you've had your hands in is urban design and planning. And those are things that I have always been very interested in, but I have not studied. I studied sociology, and you know, that kind of touches on a lot of urban planning and really the center of it. But I've been thinking a lot over the past few months about the idea of accessible spaces in terms of, and these are two different things, public space and then also shared space. And what I mean by shared space, this is kind of different now in this new world, but in the pre-COVID world, I would think of like a hotel lobby, right?
Yep.
And you think that anyone can come on in and have a coffee and sit down and go on your laptop, but it's really not inviting to everyone. You've done work on, and you're on the board of a few projects, including the rail park here in Philly, which is more of a public park. and reutilizing that space. So how, when you approach urban design, how do you look at it in terms of ensuring that a space is not just accessible to a select few, but to all?
Yeah. I think, you know, the biggest challenge right now when I think about urban design is that it's only telling one story. Everything tells a story, but when it's a singular story, you leave a lot of people out, and a lot of individuals, again, people of color, Black people, women, have been left out of the narrative of space. And it's so easy to hide the fact that those stories aren't there, but you feel them. When you walk into a lobby, when you walk into a plaza, we all know who belongs there and who doesn't belong there. When you think about the policing of those spaces, whether it's the rail park or the High Line or, you know, any other public space that you can think about, there are people who feel very welcomed, and then there are people who are made to feel that they're not welcoming. And so it goes to not just the built environment, it's how you service that built environment as well. And also making sure that their stories are a part of it. A lot of times what developers will do is that they believe they can go into a neighborhood, start to build something, and then just put some graffiti on the side to say that they thought about the community. And that is not community design at all. It may be a beautiful piece, but that is not a reflection of the story of the people who live there. And we have to move beyond just putting up a piece of graffiti wall and thinking that, oh, we're going to welcome the community in. It's going into that community, understanding their story, understand how they want to be represented in those stories. You know, we talked a lot about this in when it comes to hotels, and particularly, you know, there's some particular hotel in DC that we had conversations with in regards to how they were integrated into the neighborhood. And one of the particular challenges was around jobs and, you know, making sure that people felt welcome to work there, and who was representing the neighborhood, versus having people there that did not represent the neighborhood. And what does it mean to retain those individuals as well? So the lobby isn't just for people who are staying there or visiting. It's also a space where people who work there want to feel like they belong also. So that those are aspects that I feel the work that we do and the work that others do that can help to represent those communities.
Cool. I love that. Yeah, that I've been thinking about that a lot recently too, like whether it's a coffee shop or a hotel or whatever it may be, I'll see in these quote unquote like newly gentrified areas, they'll have very hip young people with a bunch of tattoos. And I'll just talk about Philly right now. Maybe that person has only lived in Philadelphia for a year and a half, and they're giving them employment, and they might live on the other side of the city, right? But what about the people in that neighborhood who have, their family has lived there for decades?
That's right. There's a generation of people who are continuously being left out when they were the ones who actually stuck around. Either they couldn't move or they didn't want to move. And now the neighborhoods are changing and they don't have a voice. And that's, I believe that gentrification starts when people don't have their voice. Of course, there are so many other complexities to that conversation. But I would say that, you know, a big one for me is making sure that people have a right to speak up. They want, everyone wants their neighborhood to look nice. When you walk into a neighborhood, they want to look nice. Also, get to know what the culture is of that neighborhood. Don't walk in believing that that neighborhood has no culture because it doesn't represent what you think is culture, because it doesn't have a, you know, a coffee shop that sells $10 lattes. That doesn't mean that it doesn't have culture. nor does $10 latte mean that you now have culture. It goes in so many different ways, and we need to all slow down and respect people who've been living there. And this is what I mean by people-centered design and understanding the culture of people and communities and making sure that they are represented.
Right. And that takes time. There Absolutely. Has to be a sense of trust there too.
Absolutely.
And not just a marketing plan of what you said of throwing a piece of graffiti on the side of a building and really marketing it to consumers and saying, oh, look, we care about this neighborhood. You kind of don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, that talking about giving people a voice and having them feel heard, this is something that you and I have talked about before over the years. And it's very important to both of us, you as a Black man and myself as a woman, this idea and the clear importance of diversity of thought and diversity of lived experiences and how those influence a given industry or a practice or a company, whatever it may be, it can really be applied to any arena, whether it's design or media or food or real estate. You've helped me put panels together before on tangentially related topics, and you've moderated those panels. And I think that you have a very beautiful way of addressing it and not pointing fingers at people, because, you know, clearly on those panels, you were talking to a room full of white men who don't want to be criticized. But you address it in a lot of a problem-solving way, more so. So through your various projects or your day-to-day, how do you make sure that those voices who may be muted sometimes or underrepresented, and those faces of influence are amplified?
Yeah, I would say the first thing that's most important for people who are listening to this, I challenge you to always be yourself and be authentic. I think that too many of us hide who we are to accommodate people who may not always want to accept us. And so I am unapologetically me and make sure that I show up with my best self. Then that means that I don't have to feel insecure about myself. And that means that I can be very honest to you about how I'm feeling without attacking you. Most people attack people because they're feeling some insecurity about who they are. And so my ability to be on a panel or speak honestly in a business meeting is because, one, I'm just going to be myself. And in being myself, that means I'm representing my past, my experience, the things that I go through as a Black man. And I'm also never forgetting the other people who don't have a certain level of privilege that I have to be on a panel, to be on a podcast like this. And so I have a responsibility to also speak their truth and make sure that, again, when you put purpose to your privilege, then you think about others. And what I talked about before is building my empathetic muscles to make sure that it's not about me, but it's about us. And so I want to make sure that from a developer's perspective, that they understand that they're actually losing value by not recognizing people in the culture and representing those voices. They're losing margin. This is just smart business. This isn't charity. This is smart business. Mm-hmm. And when you put it in the context of that, most business people, particularly, you know, say older white businessmen, they understand. They can get it. It takes time to get them to put it into action. there's definitely a lot of nodding of the heads and yeah, I get it. I totally, you know, would love to do that. And I just need to figure out how we can do it and still get our returns in the bottom line. I have to, you know, come back at them and call bullshit on that, because there are plenty of models that allow them to build mixed use affordable housing, as well as making something that is amazing and beautiful and adds value. And so again, it's being straightforward, knowing who you are, having some key facts, and not allowing people to get off the hook when they're starting to squirm and feel uncomfortable. I think we are in a place right now that people need to be okay with feeling the same discomfort that I feel and you feel as a woman in these spaces. And too many times we are too accommodating to those feelings and saying, oh, well, I don't want anyone to feel hurt or, you know, uncomfortable. And I think it's okay to be uncomfortable, and it's okay for us to hold that space and allow them to be uncomfortable. So.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And with the first thing that you pointed out, I, you know, as I get older throughout the years, I find myself more at peace when I'm accepting of myself. And that's, you know, my flaws or my quirks or anything about me, because sometimes those are what make us special.
Absolutely.
It's not just our strengths that you can see at surface level. But I agree, once you accept yourself, you're way less likely to go and project any hate or, you know, unchoice words at someone, whether it's to progress things or not.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How have you been spending the last 6 months?
Yeah, just look, I empathize with anyone that is going through the changes that are happening. And this, you know, with COVID and a lot of the social justice issues that have been going on for a long time, but really came to a pivotal moment with George Floyd. This is a really tough time. And for me, it has forced me to slow down. You know, I was usually flying, you know, 150,000 miles a year and traveling tremendously. And so it has allowed me to slow down. I'm really enjoying the process of doing that. I'm enjoying the process of being able to read a lot more. I am enjoying the process of strategizing and collaborating. I think a lot of people are more open to collaborating right now because we're all trying to pivot our business and our models. And so it has been nice being able to reach out to individuals that may not have taken a meeting before, but because we don't have to, we're not paying for meals, we're not going out and having drinks anymore. We know that it's, you know, a 30 minute to an hour Zoom call or regular call, and you're off to the next. I think there's a lot of intentions or focus because of the time we're living in. And so I am enjoying that moment that allows us to collaborate. And people like yourself who are, you know, doing this and having a podcast. This is amazing. Who would have had time to even think about doing this pre-COVID?
Yeah, for real. It's funny because I think that, well, I do want to acknowledge what everyone is going through right now. Everyone's going through something that has been brought on by COVID or, you know, the current economic way of life too. Who knows what the economy is going to look like tomorrow, right? So all of the social injustice, which is absolutely nothing new. But I think that it's allowed exactly what you said for more collaboration, but then also more creativity, because we're really forced to look outside the box. And yeah, while a lot of people were and probably some people still are upset that they have to be in their house more than they would like, I think that it's brought some more, at least for myself, more awareness of what is really important and meaningful. And I think that that's really a beautiful thing. And I don't know if that would have happened this time of this year if COVID never happened.
Yeah. Yep. No, I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think that when this is all not over, but when we are moving towards that next phase of this, I think that many of us will look back and see ourselves differently in the way that we were able to get through this. My hope is that a lot of us, we've grown, we've had, you know, some self-reflecting, and we're seeing ourselves differently, which means that we hopefully can see this country and this world differently as well.
Yeah. And make changes too.
Absolutely.
Not just sit dormant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is there anything else top of mind that you want to touch on before we sign off?
No, I just, one, thank you for the opportunity to speak. It's always fun speaking with you. And I think that these conversations are really important, and I appreciate your, you know, the questions and your curiosity and of getting to know people. And I also hope that the people, the listeners and people you're sharing this with, I hope that I'm able to provide some insight on, and people can feel free to reach out to me and engage, you know, even more so. So thank you.
Of course. Thank you for taking the time. I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, no, this was great. This was great.
Yeah. Hey, thank you again for listening to Ahead of the Curve. I hope that you were able to pull some golden nuggets from this conversation. Don't forget to subscribe to Ahead of the Curve on Apple Podcasts, follow along on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on Instagram. I've got some fun visuals and more content for you. That is at Ahead of the Curve, with a 3 instead of an E. All right, catch y'all soon.